Thanks again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, not at it alone, busting through the dark, looking for scary things, but not looking too hard. Sitting beside me right now is Kyle Felsen.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful
in North Central Texas today, right? Beautiful. We've been on a roller coaster. It's like the Texas weather has been spitting out lottery numbers. 85, 14, 63, 22, right? It's like, what is going on?
Man. It is fun, though. Keeps you on your toes.
Keeps you on your toes. I just want to stay cool for a little longer because our summers are long
That's
enough.
That's true. Yeah, I'd like cool weather for as long as I can have this year.
I've already been gathering up stuff for the garden. I got some more raised beds delivered to our house the other day. So I'm already planning. This year, I'm going to be even more prepared than I was last year because I know things that I did wrong and I know things that I did right. And so I'm excited.
We're going to get ours going. We had to put down my wife's big dog.
Oh, no.
And so, yep. So Captain is no longer with us. And because of that, I'm going to have to move some of his stuff and all this. And now we're going to have more room for beds. So that's kind of what we waited on. So that's what we've got going on now is we're fixing to convert all that over into bed space.
Man, I didn't know that about your dog. Oh, Brad.
Yep. He had some real significant kidney issues and there was no coming back. So that was that. Yep. That's what we got going on. So that's what we've had happen.
I got you.
Just worked. Just worked out, but
you're going to get you another dog now?
No. Well, we still got the one. We've got the little one. Sydney's with us. And she's been pretty bummed out. She's been pretty bummed out that her big buddy isn't here. So, and she's old too. She's a little terrier though. You know, she's like you little tiny dog. So I don't know if we're looking to get one, probably not anytime soon. Probably take a little time before we decide. You know,
I miss your three-legged cat.
Man, he was something else, wasn't he?
I wonder whatever happened
old
to him.
Old Tucker. I don't think just old.
He just walked off and laid down somewhere.
He was just one of those. That was the way it was. Yeah, we had him for a hot minute. And he was old when we got him. That was the one I think I'd told everybody on there. Somebody had shot him.
Actually, that's right.
And that's what messed his leg up. And somebody found him and took him in. And they were going to put him down. And then my mom saved him and had all that done. Then I got, he was a whole thing. But Tucker, he was like a man. That's what he was. He was just real grumpy. He was like a grumpy old man.
Perfect fit for grumps.
That's right. That was right.
Speaking of shooting, check this out. This happened to a group of deer hunters. It says, when I was in high school, my uncle and I would hunt deer and turkey in eastern Kansas. In 1999, we were near the Marias de Cygnus Refuge.
Where's that at?
I don't know. Eastern Kentucky or Kansas. Bow hunting for deer in a swampy woodland area. We'd been in the same location before and were familiar with the layout. Both of us had portable tree stands overlooking the bottomland. We had been in our stands for about an hour. It was early morning, but I don't remember the time. My uncle was to the right of me about 50 yards, so we could both see anything moving below. I heard splashing from his direction and noticed him waving at me. The splashing was getting louder. I first thought it might be a small herd of deer moving my way. As I looked through the thickets, I noticed something tall and bulky standing beside a tree. I then saw something similar a few feet away from the other figure. I looked over at my uncle. He was crouched down and was still. The two figures started to move towards me. Then one worked its way into a clearing, and I was able to get a good look. It was definitely a Bigfoot. This thing was huge. It was around 8 foot tall and covered head to toe in matted, muddy, dark hair. It was reaching into the water and putting whatever it found in its mouth. I didn't see the other Bigfoot. It must have moved off in another direction. I was as still as possible, though, and I was shaking. The Bigfoot was no more than 100 foot from me, and I was only 12 feet up in a tree. I must have watched it for 10 minutes or so as it waded through the water, eating whatever it could pull out. It eventually walked away from us towards the woods and the opposite rise. My uncle looked at each other, but didn't make a sound. I was ready to get out of there, but he remained in his stand, holding his hand palm out to let me know to hold on. I wasn't even thinking about hunting deer anymore that day. About 15 or 20 minutes had gone by. My uncle started waving his hand. I did the same. I started dropping the ladder and climbing down. He got down as well. We walked toward each other and agreed to come back for the stands later. In fact, I didn't go back. That afternoon, my dad and grandfather went back with my uncle to look around to retrieve the stands. Both of them believed that we saw the Bigfoot.
Ooh.
My grandfather said he believed they were eating freshwater mussels and snails. I never went back to that area, though I do still hunt. That was the only time I'd ever seen anything like that. I'd be interested to know if any other witnesses have sightings like ours in eastern Kansas and western Missouri. I've heard many stories, but nothing recent. See. Now, Cam, I know you go hunting in Kansas. You were just there.
Yep.
But I don't know if you were in the eastern portion.
Northeastern.
You were in northeastern. Did you see anything that looked squatchy? Did it look like...
Where we were?
Yeah.
It looked incredibly squatchy.
It did?
Yeah.
So not crazy. Having been there, you know, it's always like in your mind, you're trying to picture what it looks like.
And when we were in western Kansas, it was awful. It was open. Like, it was awful open. It was rolling. It was really awesome, but it was different.
Right, right.
Than where there was a lot less hills. I mean, like, yeah, it was, but I could see where we were, yeah, out there and that. But I mean.
So it definitely seems squatchy.
Heck yeah. But I look at things all the time like, man, if I was a squatch, I think I could hide in there. Like, there's places it's probably not squatchy that I think would be just because I'm like, oh, I think they could hide in there.
Right, right.
Look, Lon probably sent this to you. I don't know if you've seen it. He sent it to us, folks. I've got to share this. We have another Glimmer Man report.
I love Glimmer Man sightings. Oh,
get a load of this. It says, hi, y'all. I've read a few of your reports about the Glimmer Man phenomenon and decided to contact you. In 1999, the year I graduated from college, my buddy and I were at Crooked Lake, Wisconsin. It was late afternoon, around 5 p.m. It was late spring and full daylight. We had parked on County Road W in an area where there was a clearing of about 20 square yards. We were both leaning on the car, just looking around, when I saw what looked like the cloaked predator from the film run along the tree line. Well, I hesitated for a second, and then turned to my buddy and I asked him, "Have you seen that movie Predator?" And he replied, "I just saw it too, dude." We remained calm, finished our beers, the first beer of the day, as we were completely sober, and then we got the hell out of there. Now, that spring, there was one other time wherein I saw something running along the tree line while cloaked like the predator. Well, it was, you know, while I was looking out the bay window of my friend's cabin. So it was running through the front yard along the tree line. The cabin was in the general area, the same general area, but north of Crooked Lake. In both instances, it had a human-like form and was almost transparent. Very weird. F.
Wow. Yeah, man. I don't know what people are seeing, but it's all the stories are similar, right?
Glimmer Man.
Yeah, I know.
I can't help it. But just like that. So here's what was unique to me about that. They saw it up down by the lake. And then up north of there, it's like at a friend's house, saw it again.
Yeah.
Was it following you? Did it know you saw it? Like, what's the odds, right? Or are there more of these things out there all the time and we just only notice the ones that maybe make a mistake? Maybe their Glimmer Man suit's low on batteries. I don't know. And it kind of gives them away.
Yeah, that's a good, I don't know, man.
I have no idea.
Crazy, crazy. Speaking of crazy, check this out. During the spring of 2003, I was visiting my sister who lives in Hempstead, New Hampshire. She lives in a somewhat wooded subdivision. It was early spring in New England, and the weather had been fairly rainy. I would frequently go outside by myself to smoke cigarettes late at night, on the porch after midnight. While I was outside, I would hear large sticks crack and break on the forest floor near where I was sitting, but no leaves rustling. At first, I didn't think much of it. I am a seasoned camper and just didn't think it was that big of a deal. I figured it was just an animal of some kind. This happened night after night. Then I noticed the sounds of something dropping out of the trees and an animal or being of some kind scraping on the bark as if it was descending down the tree. I tried looking for movement, but saw nothing, like an animal or anything. The floodlights were on every time I was out there and were brightly shining. There was a street light at the end of this long paved driveway, very far off in the distance. On subsequent nights, I took a flashlight and tried to shine whatever animal it might be with, but to no avail. Even though everything was brightly lit, I saw nothing at all. I tried this night after night. The sounds were there every single evening without fail. I could hear them moving closer and closer to me the longer that I was out there. And during the day, I would look for tracks and marks on trees or other evidence, but it ended up not turning up anything. I picked up sticks and broke a few to see what size stick I was hearing. I ascertained that the stick diameter was about an inch. I had my 11-year-old nephew go out in the woods to jump on some sticks and see if he could break some of them, so I could check the way it sounded from where I was sitting, trying to judge the distance. He jumped on some, but because they were kind of moist, he could only break the smaller ones. He only weighed 75 to 80 pounds. This told me that whatever it is, it weighs much more than that. Now, I could break the bigger ones by jumping on them, but I weigh 150 pounds. There are no animals in that area that are really large and could break that size of a stick based on the simple test that I did. Whatever it was would move close to me, so I used the nephew to run around and make similar noises to gauge the distance in the daylight when they were there at their closest to me in the nighttime. They were about 20 to 30 feet from me at best. I know there was more than one of them because I could hear one back beside the house and another one near the front of the driveway. They moved in very close to where I was, and I could hear them coming from two different directions. They were not visible to the naked eye, though, not at all. I tried to take some digital photos, but saw nothing discernible in the pictures. Another thing that happened, my sister didn't have any window coverings downstairs. She loved the view of the trees, and I would sit at night on her computer, surfing the web and chatting online near those windows. I frequently would get the feeling that someone or something was watching me. I always wrote it off as just my imagination. Then there was the issue of the dogs barking and howling every night really late, like they too were hearing something. They were kept in crates in the basement at night, and they would start their howling and wouldn't stop unless someone would go down there to make them stop. They also would look out the windows late in the evening and start barking at whatever was behind the house, as if something was there. We always just thought it was just another animal or whatever, and wrote it off. Now, my brother-in-law decided to keep the dogs upstairs with him at night to keep them quiet. I was outside one night very late after midnight, alone. I was up on our porch near the door. I heard them coming again. The floodlights were on, and I could see well into the trees because there wasn't too many smaller bushes in the way. I saw nothing again, but I could hear them. No rustling, only sticks breaking. My sis had a few planters with flowers in them on the lower landing from where I was standing. It was in a really bright light from the floodlights and was only about 8 to 10 feet away from me. Some of the flowers in the planter draped over the side and hung out of the way of the planters. As I stood there, I watched the plants move to one side and then flop back as though something had brushed past them. Only nothing was there, nothing at least that I could see. There were no other sounds like footsteps or grinding pebbles or grit. There was no wind rustling or nothing. When the flowers swung, they moved a lot, not just a little. Whatever it was would have to come up the stairs to get me. I stood there shocked, sort of running over what I had just seen in my mind briefly, and got freaked out completely. I went inside quickly and locked the door. Everyone else was asleep in the house. I looked out the side window and saw nothing. What was moving through the woods? What was pursuing me? Was it a ghost? Was it a spirit? Was it a glimmer man? What was in those woods? This happened to me many times over many evenings. I will point out, you guys always joke about cigarette smoking and the paranormal. Every time I had this experience, I was outside smoking a cigarette. Thanks, Jay.
Pow.
Right? What is it with the cigarette smoking? We made jokes before that I'm going to take up cigarette smoking just so maybe I can have an encounter.
Just so I can have something crazy happen.
But like,
you would think if you smoke cigars, maybe the crazier things happen.
Well, look, Pop smokes cigars. Hey, he's probably got the craziest life of all time. I mean, the human cockroach.
It's the man himself.
You know, like you were talking about making a t-shirt.
Yeah.
What was the remember the old Barack Obama shirts?
Well, they like said, the Che Guevara or what?
Yeah.
But
So I was thinking, because they used to have the Barack Obama ones that said hope.
Yeah.
I was going to get one of Pop-Pop's face, but it just says nope. Because remember, he always says nope.
Dude, we're doing it.
I thought that would be good. Yeah. But anyways.
Good idea.
Just like you were talking about the Glimmer Man sighting. That's what this guy's hearing the stuff, and he's on to it. And so much so that he's taking camera equipment with him. He's watching. He can hear sticks snapping. He knows that they're large sticks.
I like using the nephew for bait. Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah, well, I think he was reenacting things during the daylight to see if he could judge the distance.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
Good move, right? Good move. But he can hear it, but he can't see anything. Like, whatever it is, it's invisible.
That seems to be, like, the running trend is, like, it can produce this sound, right? But you can't see it.
But this also could be Faye. Because they like to mess with people.
Oh, yeah.
And if they clearly know that it's bothering you, it's like they're mischievous, right? They want to do it.
I think they get something in return from it, and they enjoy it.
Everybody listening to this knows that you can get on somebody's nerves, and you do it a little more because it is kind of enjoyable. That's what they're doing, right?
That's how the fae operate.
And I can't
tell
how many times I've been in the woods hunting, and I'm hearing something, and I'm looking, and I'm not seeing it. Has that never happened to you?
It happens to me all the time, but now I don't know if it's my eyes or if there's really something. Well, you know what it was? It's like those pigs.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm not claiming that I'm having experiences with Glimmer Man. I'm saying sometimes when you're in the woods, it might sound like it's just right there, but it's not.
Yeah, because you thought it was in between us, the sound, the way it was.
Oh, you're talking about the war of all wars.
The Hog
okay,
War.
Okay, folks, I don't know if you ever talked about this.
Here we go.
This was only a couple months ago, like 2 months ago. It was in the evening. Now, Cam is down in a bottom, and I'm up on a flat, a cedar
down
flat.
Down in a hole.
Cam's down in a hole, yep. And I would say, distance-wise, we're probably 3/4 to a mile apart, if you had to walk. Don't you think?
I don't know if we're that far. Yeah.
It's pretty.
It's a pretty good ways up the hill and all that. We're a pretty good little clip.
I would say 3/4 of a mile apart. So like if I yelled, I can't hear him. We're that far apart. And I, of course, can't see him. Like I said, I'm up on a cedar break. You're down in a bottom. Well, there's one night. It's about 30 minutes till dark. Mm-hmm. And I can hear this ungodly sound. And I know what it is. It's pigs. Pigs fighting. But I mean, it sounds like there's a war going on.
Yeah.
Like high-pitched squealing, and I get a text, and Cam's like, there are some hogs having it out. I'm like, dude, I can hear them. So I think they're in between me and him, and I know when it gets dark out, I got to walk to meet him, and he knows he's got to walk to meet me. Now, mind you, all we have are trad bows, stick bows, and I don't know how many he's got, 5. I only got 4 arrows in my quiver, and I'm not real good at 20 yards in broad daylight, right? So I'm like, dude, they're between us. And he's like, no, they're not. They're right almost underneath me.
They were close.
I can't see them, but they're probably 25 to 35 yards away.
Yeah, they were in the brush, and they were not happy. I was in the mix.
You're like, I don't know how I'm going to get down. And I'm like, well, I don't know how you're going to get down either, because I'm not coming out there.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to wait until daylight.
So finally we got down, and he met me, and I was like, man, I could hear it.
It was... I wish you could have heard how loud it was right there.
I wish I had a recording, because people that aren't familiar with what it sounds like two demons fighting.
It does.
I mean, high-pitched squeals, guttural sounds. You can hear their teeth.
Oh, it was something else.
And we don't know what was happening.
No. Yeah. Well, we know what was happening. Fights.
I don't know what they were fighting over, folks. But it was wild.
Yeah. It was something else.
But that's, you know.
But I think of the same thing. When you hear that, right? Just like that, you hear the breaking sticks. You can hear all this stuff, but like you can't see it. And that's every time I think of those pigs.
Yeah.
Like I can hear them going crazy, but I can't see them. Look. I've got some really wild stuff to hook y'all up with. Something that I had recorded a while back. I enjoy this very much. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about some maybe the possible Red Devil sightings. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Most scientific studies will tell you that resolutions often don't succeed, but you might not know why. Well, one reason is that if you don't have a plan in place, introducing a new habit or behavior can be tough to implement. That's why Prolon's 5-day program is better than any resolution. It's a real, actionable plan for real results. Prolon by L Nutra is the only patented fasting mimicking diet that works on a cellular level to deliver benefits like targeted fat loss and sustained weight loss, glowing skin, improved metabolic health, and enhanced cellular rejuvenation. Prolon's fasting mimicking diet is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making cells believe that they're fasting. Now, this triggers cellular reprogramming, paving the way for the creation and function of rejuvenated, younger cells. Researched and developed for decades at USC's Longevity Institute and backed by leading U.S. medical centers, Prolon helps promote healthy blood sugar, enhanced skin appearance, fat loss, and improved energy and focus. It all starts with their 5-day program. Snacks, soups, and beverages designed to keep your body in a fasting state. No guesswork or planning required, which is a relief after a busy week. 3 consecutive cycles of Prolon have been shown to reduce your biological age score by an average of 2.5 years and your waist circumference by 1.5 inches. Everybody knows fasting is healthy. They also know that fasting can be challenging, but not with Prolon. Prolonged fasting activates autophagy, the body's cellular repair process, where it removes and recycles old and damaged cells. Prolon is the first and only patented nutrition program to support longevity through such cellular rejuvenation. Now, we tried the 5-day program, and we feel so much better. Prolon really isn't like any other diet that I've tried, because it's not a diet. It's science, folks. It was so convenient. They sent us everything that we needed all in one box. They have lots of products like fasting bars, fasting shakes, protein shakes, a delicious longevity health-minded chocolate spread, and even health bundles. Don't know what you need? No problem. Just take their Getting Started quiz, and they'll tell you everything that you needed based on your goals.
I enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of fasting anyway.
Yeah.
Look, it's one of those things, and I didn't really become a fan. It just was forced on me through my work, and now it's just turned into what it is, and I truly enjoy it. Prolon helps. Listen, y'all, if you want to help kickstart a health plan that truly works, Prolon's offering expanded perspective listeners 15% off site-wide, plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day nutrition program. It's simple. You just visit Prolon.com/expanded. Now, I'm going to lay this on you. It's Prolon, P-R-O-L-O-N, Prolon Life, L-I-F-E. So ProlonLife.com/expanded. You go there, you're going to claim your 15% discount and your bonus gift, folks. ProlonLife.com/expanded. It's story time with Uncle Ham. And this one, like I say, there's some of them that we cover or that I cover that I guess I feel a fondness or a more fondness, if you will. Is that a word? More fondness. A little bit closer to them because in a way I have some sort of tie, whether it is I've known someone that's involved in this or I myself, let's not say experienced it, but may have learned about this or found out about this or did something involving this, these stories way prior to any of the show or, you know, any of this back in my younger days. And this one was one of those stories. This is one of those stories that I didn't know a lot about. And in all actuality, I had pretty much, I can't say, you know, blocked or erased for any reason or just, but it just tucked it away, you know, not even holding it in my memory. And, it was one of those things. I read a little something had popped up. I don't remember if it was online somewhere or from a message somebody had sent. And I'm like, oh, hell, I remember something like that. And then the more I go to look, and it brought back those memories of like things that you forget. Like you run into somebody from school, you know, and they start talking about it. You're like, dude, I forgot all about that. And they tell you, that's kind of what this ended up happening. But before I get into that, I'm going to tell you the story and lay the groundwork down of and kind of give you the background of how this started and how that started. It's just a fun little history. There's some stuff written about it. So let me start in on this whole thing. We're talking about the Red Devil. All right. Now, this is a cloven footed creature, folks, that haunted, if you will, and hunted and did the dirty work in southeast, I guess, more southern and eastern corners of Arizona, which is interesting because, again, like I said, we're going to Arizona this year. So you got to go back in time. And we're talking back all the way to 1883. There was a place in the Arizona territory on what's called Eagle Creek. And in Eagle Creek, there were some people, you know, lived there. And at this time, there was a couple of young ladies and had their children out, you know. And it's in the morning, springtime. It's all awesome. So the fellas, the story had been gone. And the story goes that the men folk had gone out because Geronimo had been in this area, been raiding through this area, and had taken a lot of their sheep, had gone through and killed several sheep. You have to imagine raiding parties looking for food. What's easier, to kill a whitetail or to go in there to a pasture that's penned in and kill some sheep? So, of course, the sheep. So the fellas had gone out, you know, to do for such overlooks and find out what the heck's going on and be like, how many sheep did we lose? And you also have to imagine, too, there was, you know, at this time, it could have been dangerous for the ladies to be left there. But who knows? You know, it's, we have no idea. But anyway, sometime mid-morning, let's say, one of the ladies left the house and she had gone to get some water from, there was a spring down behind her house. And, you know, you've got to imagine the willow trees growing around it and the cattails growing around it and all that. Well, after she goes out, the dog, they have, you know, everybody's got a dog. So the dog starts raising hell, right? Well, the other lady in the house with the kids that was watching while she went to get the water. Now, you have to imagine, too, this wasn't a long ways from the house, you know, 100 yards maybe from the house where this spring was. So the lady in the yard, you know, in the house is like, what's the dog barking at? Starts looking around. What she reported that she saw, or what the lady was claimed to have seen, was that it was an enormous red creature ridden by what she described as the devil himself rode this creature. At the time she witnesses this coming by, she starts hearing screams, and it's the screams of the lady, of course, that's gone to get the water. So she panics, you know, and this isn't a ride or die friend that's in the house. You can only imagine. What does she do? She doesn't go out to help. She closes the door, puts everything she can push against it to block the door off, and she just starts praying, gathers the kids, starts praying. Stays there. She doesn't even go anywhere at this point. And she waits. The men finally get there. So the men have been out assessing and I guess doing whatever, you know, men at the time do whenever they go out, in air quotes, checking sheep. And they get there and she tells them what's happened. So they all get their, you know, they got to get lights. They don't have lights. What do? They get torches. Great. I know what you're thinking. Oh, good job. You know, guys with torches, this never ends well, right? So they head down to where the spring is. They're like, that's the last place we saw her. They go down there. What do? They find her body. Stomped into the ground, like mashed in, like you would think like an elephant, you'd think something along that lines, right? And in the mud, they said that they were cloven prints twice the size of a horse that was down here. And some even claim that they were long, like coarse red hairs hanging from the branches of the willow trees and in some of the thorn bushes that were down there leading to it. There was a lot of, you know, all of this stuff. So they have no idea what just happened, except it's extremely strange and suspicious of what was going on. They said that, so they end up taking her to this town called Solomonville, and they go there because there's a corner, right? There's a corner there. So they bring her to the corner, which I'm sure was just nothing more than a medical doctor at the time. Like the memes and the jokes are, if you're sick, they're just going to give you cocaine and put like a poultice on it of like bacon lard and some smashed gnats and, you know, who the heck knows. But anyway, so that's what they do. So the family is like, somebody killed her. And so the coroner starts looking and he's like, man, I think somebody did kill her. Like this isn't like a normal, like an assault to death. Like something is horrible. And on her body were these footprints, these cloven hooved, you know, bigger than a horse's hooves prints on even on her body. So this goes on. They do this whole thing. They start to, you know, asking all the family, where were you? Where were you? Who was there? You know, and intentions are high if the natives are on a tear through there and, you know how all that goes. So you can imagine everything's on edge. They're wanting to blame somebody. Whole thing goes down there. They can only go where the judge is like, hey, look, it's an unknown death. Like, we don't know. Man or unknown. She was stomped to death. But by what, we don't know. So they have no idea. So you fast forward about a week or so. There's a couple of prospectors, and they're doing their prospector thing down on Chase's Creek, which is actually a little tributary and offset. If you start going the maps, you start looking at the Rio, San Francisco, you start going through that part of Arizona, finding all that where they're, you know, panning for gold. This part was actually northeast of Eagle Creek where they live. So instead of the southern part, you just move up a little bit, you know. So, yeah, like they're traveling. In the middle of the night, these guys, of course, you got to imagine they're exhausted, right? They're laying there. They said in the middle of the night, their tent comes crashing down on them. And when it comes crashing down, they hear this noise, this screaming, echoing, bellowing sound right there while the tent, canvas tent's down on them. And they can hear, they said, what sounded like giant hooves, like giant horse hooves, like when they're prancing, like when a horse gets nervous, he stomps his feet, they're rearing up. That's what it sounded like outside of their tent. And so they come tearing out of the tent, and they said what they noticed was something that was larger than a horse, taller than a horse, and busted through the brush in the trees like it was nothing, just pushing and running through there. So they go, you know, of course, you got to imagine sleep's over for the night, right, folks? There's no more sleeping. So they go down and they move down to another mining camp, and they start telling the miners that next at daylight, this is what's happened. So they bring the miners back. So they all come through there to help out, right? So all the miners are looking, the guys that had this going through, like, we don't know what it is. What do they find? They find broken brush, snapped off limbs from something extremely large, red hair in the bushes, and these giant tracks. So, you know, at this point, everybody's going crazy. So they start looking. Well, there's like nine guys in this group with them. So what do? They start telling other people, and it gets back, of course, to the others involved and the other people that had found the lady. So they start putting two to two together. They're like, there's something out here. Something's not right. So because of the red hair and the size of this thing, they start changing the name to either like the Red Demon or the Red Ghost. And so that's what they do. This crazy animal that nobody had ever seen, and it is killing people. It's attacked these miners in a tent. And you can only imagine it, too. There's one that goes into that. I can't remember if it was a prospector or an actual trapper or something along those lines. But anyway, there's another story that said a guy set out after it and the guy was never seen again. They believed he was killed. There's another story that goes on that said that it was witnessed by two individuals that were on a scouting trip. I guess maybe scouting for who knows what. Maybe it was the military, whatever. But anyway, that there was a scouting trip and that these two people witnessed it kill a grizzly bear out there. And of course, I know you're saying there's no grizzlies in Arizona. There were elk. There was all kinds of stuff in different places than what there are now. So they said, oh, it killed a bear and it ate this bear. We watched it eat this bear whole, big bites, you know, and all that stuff. And people was like, eh. And you can only imagine, this is how stories grow. I mean, we've all had stories grow like along these whole things. So you fast forward still. Now, like I said, this is all taking place within a month or two of each other. So you jump forward and there was another event, and this other event was near the Salt River, which actually is now you've pushed up. It's almost, it's I think 80 or 90 miles, I believe, from Eagle Creek where this actual event took place. So almost 100 miles away, they had this thing go down. There was a rancher up there named Cyrus Hamblin. And of course, I think Cyrus is a cool name to start with. So Cyrus, he's out hunting for strays, right? He's looking for his cattle. So he's riding his horse. He's out there on this ridge and he's riding along looking. And this is without, you know, they don't have binoculars. They don't have, you know, they do, but who really probably doesn't afford them as a rancher. So he's just out checking on all this stuff. And he says that down below, there's real dense brush in this ravine, real thick brush. And at the bottom of this ravine, it had kind of leveled off like a little flat tabled area there. And so he's up on this ridge looking down. And he said, while he's looking down in this thick brush, that's probably, you know, head tall. If you,
if you watch any of the old Westerns or you even go on any on YouTube and looking at that, some of the brush, you know, looking down from the top doesn't look so thick. But when you get down there, it's you could see over it if he was riding through it on a horse. So but that's why you got to get up above it to see down in there to try to find your cattle. Well, so he says that what he saw was a giant red animal just pushing its way through the brush, just making its way through there. And he said the minute he saw it, that his everything around him changed. His demeanor changed. He's like everything. I could feel my horns, my horse tense. I was like, we could feel like there was something not right. You know, he said the hair on his arms were standing on end. He's like, something is not right. So he keeps watching. He's like, man, what is this? So he rides a little further and he gets up on the ridge where he can kind of not really parallel, but he's kind of back paralleling it. So he's moving with it, but he's waiting for it to come out of the brush. And he does this for a quarter of a mile. He's silently riding and following this thing, trying to see what the hell this creature is. He wants to get a better look at it. It finally comes out into an open space where he can see it. It's a camel. Yeah, that's right, folks. Get a good laugh. It's a camel. That's it. A camel. Now, what's wild is the stories that grew of it devouring grizzly bear, of it attacking a tent, of it doing all these things where there was tracks, but it was a camel. Now, most people, when you talk about these camels, you're like, there's no camels in Arizona. Like, what's it doing there? Well, it just so happened that Cyrus had done a lot of traveling back in the day, right? And he had spent a lot of his time near the California border. And he had heard of camels being used as far as back then for packing, especially when guys found out how well they could survive in the desert. Now, he said he had never heard of them being this far up. But what it was is he had known people. And you can only imagine back then, I mean, like we do now, people take alpacas or they take llamas whenever they go on elk hunts or mule deer hunts up in the mountains to pack in, because lots of times they're easier to handle and you take more of them. They can't pack as much weight, of course, but they're extremely sure footed. They're made for mountains. You know, horses aren't necessarily made for mountains, but when you have a lot of backcountry hunters, if you do a lot of research into it, they'll take llamas. Like, they love to pack llamas. Well, the same could be said for camels, you could imagine. But I know it's crazy because you're thinking back then, well, how the hell did they get camels here? You know, I mean, we don't have them here now unless somebody brings them over. Well, we're getting to that. But here's the weird thing. During this time, Cyrus had said this. He was like, the craziest thing, he's like, it wasn't the fact that it was a camel. He said, what was funny was what was on its back. He said, now, there was quite a ways that I couldn't see the camel. You know, he's like, I could make out it was a camel, but I wasn't close enough to see the detail, but I could tell something was on its back. Of course, we're all like, yeah, Cyrus, it's humps. He's like, no, man, what it looked like was a dude riding this camel. And he said, but the crazy thing was, it's not like the dude. He said, it looked like the remains of a man riding a camel. So people started, of course, spreading this story like it was a zombie camel rider, right? Like the Night King or whatever, the White Walkers. But he's riding, instead of a dragon, he's riding a camel down here through the desert. So it's like the desert, the Dust King coming down through there. So they start talking. Well, this leads to that. And you can only imagine what ends up happening as some crazy stuff and more stories start going. And when I say more stories, I'll tell you this. Like I said, most people thought it was just a hump. That's all it was. It was the hump. But a few weeks after Cyrus had his sighting and came back and told people what he saw about 60 miles west of Verde River, all right, down in, which was, it's this was 60 miles west of where Cyrus had seen this camel. There was five prospectors and they saw this camel just feeding on a mesa, on a flat top mesa. And they were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get up there and we're going to bust it. We're going to put it down. We're just going to long range shoot this thing and we're going to be done with it. So they all slip up there on it. Now, I can only imagine what firearms they had probably weren't top of the line. Even for those days, it probably wasn't top of the line. So they get up there. They all get stretched out and they open fire on the red ghost or the red demon, this demon camel. Right? Well, guess what? They don't hit it. They said they're all just lighting it up. They don't hit it and it runs off. They said, as it ran off, something fell off of it. So they're like, well, what fell off its back? So they go up there. One of the prospectors there said what they found, and this is the way he described it, was a human skull with a few shreds of flesh and hair still clinging to it. Now, at this point, you have to imagine, first of all, this sounds like some extreme exaggeration about this red ghost. Did somebody die on its back and it's been walking around with a dead dude on its back? I guess, yeah, that would be plausible if the dude was tied to the camel or something. But I mean, you mean you're not just going to be sitting in your saddle and just get lock leg where you can just keep pinching and never fall off. I mean, you know, you're anyway, it just doesn't sound like it sounds like something crazy, right? So with this skull being found, and you can't really find a lot more after that, but with this skull being found, you can only imagine the legend grows. Well, that's kind of where it ends. There's it kind of goes away for a while. You know, people, you know, they would claim, oh, we saw this, we saw that, but this camel, it hates people. And then a few years after this, and like I said, it kind of went into nobody saw it. Everybody was like, maybe it was a bunch of BS. Nobody started seeing it. A few years later goes by again, back near Eagle Creek. Somebody said that they had a garden going, and a fella had his garden going and goes out back, and there's something in his garden eating in his tomatoes. And so he grabs his rifle and puts it down, right? And it's the camel. It's the red-haired camel, just a camel. And that was it. That was the end of the red demon, or the red ghost, if you will. It's over. That's it. So it all lasted a few years, and there was a few sightings, and something crazy happened. But you're like, well, now how the hell did this camel get out there? This is where it comes in with me and my experience with this camel thing. So like I told y'all, we had to go back in time to tell this story of 1883. But that's where it ended up. I can't say that's where it starts. In 1836, there was a fellow, there was a Lieutenant George Crossman of the Army, and he had an idea about how to get through these desert and thick areas. So he calls up some friends of his, right? So he calls up another fellow named E.H. Miller, and Crossman says, hey, look, you know, this is what we're doing. I think we could use in the military camels. Now, like I said, this is 1836, y'all. So he writes this letter to Miller. And he says this, he says, for strength in carrying burdens, for patient endurance of labor and privation of food, water, and rest, and in some respects, speed also, the camel and dromedary, as Arabian camel is called, or dromedary, are unrivaled among animals. The ordinary loads for camels are from 700 to 900 pounds each. And with these, they can travel from 30 to 40 miles a day for many days in succession. They'll go without water and with but little food for 6 or 8 days, or it is said even longer. And their feet are alike well-suited for traversing grassy or sandy plains or rough, rocky hills and paths. And they require no shoeing. For those of you that are unfamiliar, that's what they used to always talk about, how you would tell if they were chasing the natives, is they rode unshod ponies. They didn't have shoes on their horses. They didn't even trim the feet. You ride them enough in the roughy, rocky areas, it trims it for them, kind of like, you know, like a finger. It eventually grows out, and you need to trim them. But for the most part, they rode unshod. Well, this goes back into what we discussed, was when they found that woman stomped to death, is camels will attack, and that's the way they fight, a lot like horses, with their feet, their giant cloven padded feet. So yeah, this guy has done his research. He's like, we need some camels. So in 1855, there was a Secretary of War named Jefferson Davis. And what do? They send out $30,000 for the purchase and importation of camels to be employed for military purposes. Yeah. So Davis thought that this would be the idea, right? He's like, man, this is it. This is going to help us expand across these desert areas where it's hard to take stuff. Now, y'all have to remind, this is several years, 20 years maybe or so, before the railroad started coming through. So these military outposts that were way out there along these borderlands and in these desert areas, the only way to get them there was by wagons and pack mules and people. That was it. I mean, it wasn't an easy way of getting them anywhere. So he thought, let's just use these camels. So by 1857, they had taken two trips over to the Mediterranean and even to the Middle East, and they had brought back 75 camels Yeah, 75 of them. And these camels were stationed in Camp Verde, which is in central Texas, y'all. Yeah, down around San Antone. Now, they would even use them for trips, you know, up to San Antone. The reason I say bring up the whole Texas part is when I was a boy, my father, of course, I grew up with just my dad. So my father would go to different rodeos and all this stuff. And I was a little boy, traveled with him and his friends. And we were down there and we went to a museum that looked like a giant log cabin. I'll never forget it. A giant log cabin. And the whole thing was about camels. And I could never understand that even as a boy then. And my dad kept telling me the army had them here in Texas. And so I'm walking around this whole thing and everything was camel related. And I wished I could remember exactly where it was at. I mean, I don't, you know, I was like 9 at the time. So it's one of those foggy memories that I'd be lying if I told you it was an accurate memory. But anyhow, I remember these camels and that's what I was like, oh, hell, that's what I would had been reading about. So you got to imagine they split them all up at one point in 1857. They split them all up, have orders. They send some to California. They keep them there. They move them around. There's an army outpost that was north of Los Angeles at the time. They send some camels up there. And you can go and do there is a pile of research about this. Like there was a quarterly paper written in the California Historical Society back in 1930. And they talked about how important the journey of taking those camels from Texas and moving them all up into California to use was. And this is what it said. It said that had, and they're talking about the fellow O'Beal. They're talking about the guy that had worked with them to take them to it. The expedition was led by a fellow named Edward Beal. And they're talking about Ed, and they're talking about had driven his camels more than 1,200 miles in the heat of the summer through a barren country where feed and water were scarce and over high mountains where roads had to be made in the most dangerous places. Had he not accomplished what most of his closest associates said could not be done, or I'm sorry, he had accomplished. So people they wrote him off. They had no ideas or no belief that you could do this with camels because they didn't know, you know, that we didn't have any camels over here. What are you going to gauge it against? So that's what they do. Now, it took forever, of course. You can only imagine whenever they get of trying to find the right camels, trying to get, you know, everything to bring them in, the right amount of numbers, all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, when they did all of this stuff, they ended up with 33 camels. They had two of them. They're called Bactrian, the two humped. And then dromedaries, the one humped. They had 19 of those and then 19 Arabians, one Tunis camel, and one Arabian calf, and then I think they had a couple more of what other species they were. But anyway, I didn't even know this. You start looking into it. The Bactrians, the two-humped camels, they are known for their ability to carry heavy loads. They're very strong, hardy camels, whereas the Arabians are known to be faster. The Arabian camels are quicker. So the fella that got involved in this whole thing that thought, you know, this will be the work and all this stuff that they had hired to do this had the last name of Heap. He was the man that they had sent over to do all the, I guess you could say the negotiating and bring these camels back. And what it worked out to is they brought them back at $250 per camel. So the army paid $250 a camel, brought them over. They hired, while they were over there, 5 natives of these area, a couple of Arabs, a few of the Arabs and a few of the Turkish fellas. And they brought them back so they would show them while they were sailing back and kind of, I guess, more than anything, act as a drover for the group to bring them over because they knew how to handle them and start showing them how this whole thing went down. So it goes back and you know, and it's back and forth. And they get them all on board. They start coming back. The ship is just besieged by massive storms that they get hit with. It takes them almost 3 months to sail back to Texas to unload these camels. And they land on May 14th in Indianola, Texas. If you haven't heard of Indianola, listen to the song by Charlie Robinson called Indianola. But anyhow, they come back. Now, of course, during this voyage, it was hard on everybody and everything. One of the camels died. Some of the calves, there were like, I don't remember how many it was, 6 or 8 calves were born. But while on the I'm sure it was partly because of the stress of the trip. The calves were born, but the mothers weren't giving milk. And so they didn't have, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, the men are not giving milk. You're like, well, these kids, they only had two of the, I think it may have been six, but only two calves survived the trip that were actually born during the trip. So when they get here, they had 34 camels. And they said what was funny was all of these camels were actually in better health than they were whenever they left their homes. So they had been well taken care of on the ship. It was just a long, arduous journey to get them here. So they get here and they start resting, right? So on June 4th, they head out and they start marching, these camels, in their herd. And they go 120 miles to San Antonio. Now, that means they get there at June 18th. That's right, folks. That's how long it takes to get there. So the feller, Mr. Wayne, he had planned to get this ranch going and get all this stuff. And what he wanted to do was set up a breeding facility for them. He wanted to bring these over and it be his base stock and breed these camels and use this as their center hub. But Secretary Davis was like, no. And he said, that's not part of the plans. That's not what we're here for. What we're here for is to ascertain whether or not we can use these animals in military service. And he's like, if they can't be deployed and used economically and be extremely useful, there's no use. There's no use in us, you know, putting all this effort into breeding them if we haven't tested them first. So that's, it's kind of counterproductive, I guess, if you say, I understand you want to test them out, but you kind of want to hedge your bet. Start a little breeding facility and see. And if they don't work out, well, then eat them or do whatever else you got to do to them, you know, that military wise. But don't just, we're just going to run these in the ground and see what happens. So, it kind of went back and forth. Like I said, they wanted to go get more camels. Some of the money was still left that it wasn't, they didn't get to get all their $30,000. So it's one of those things. So they ended up, they finally got more of their money together and Davis was like, you know what? Go get more. We need more. So he sends Davis back over. I'm sorry, Davis sends Mr. Wayne back over to Egypt this time to get more. And they start bringing in more, camels. So they end up with like over 60 camels. And then I think they end up moving those camels. They start taking them up, like I said, to Camp Verde, which is where it was all done. And when they get to Camp Verde, that's where they decide this is going to be the home. This is where we're going to do it. And they build these corrals. They build everything to make it look like you're in Egypt. Like that's where they're from. They use all the ideas, everything. So it took several months. And of course, they brought over the natives to help them do it all. And then they've got the soldiers. And it took a while because they all had to learn how to, you know, to care for them, how to feed them. They said one of the hardest things for them to learn, there was two things. Two things was really difficult. One was the saddles. The saddles or the packs that fit the camels are completely different than anything any of the military guys had ever been used to. They've been raised with horses, right? Some cows, but they get over, they got these camels. They don't know what the hell they're doing with them. So they have to go through all this. And another thing, too, is their temperament. We all know, of course, you see it on YouTube clips and on GIFs and you can see it on Instagram. Yeah, they're really pretty docile, but you've also seen them snap. We know for a fact that they stomped a woman, one killed that woman back in Arizona that we covered at the start, that they would kick, they would bite. They also chew their own cud. You know, they chew cud and they would spit that big wad of stuff on to people. And not just the fact that now you could possibly get bitten, stomped, or kicked by these giant, you know, land monsters, these big-footed camels. Now it's spitting this crap on you. And the camel themselves, they said, had a strange odor. Now, what's funny is I've seen one at a circus when I was a kid. I don't remember anything about it other than, oh, well, it's a camel. But I've never been that close to them. But they report, and it's reported too, you go online and read about it. They talk about it. They've got a distinct odor, a strange odor. Now, it's not, I've grown up with horses, so it's horses smell like horses. Dogs smell like dogs. Horses smell like horses. I'm sure camels smell like a camel, but apparently that smell was so unfamiliar with the horses around that you couldn't keep them together. Like it would send a horse into a state of fright. And so, and I've seen it happen with horses and snakes. Dead snakes around horses. And I saw a person get bucked off the horse one time because of messing with a dead snake. But anyhow, so that took a little bit of getting used to. So you can only imagine this is this is all new territory. This is a whole learning experiment. So the military is dumping a lot of time and effort into it. And then, boom, the Civil War fires up and rebel troops come in and occupy Camp Verde. And they take some of the other camels and they start using these camels that are there to start doing transports. And they're bringing mail around San Antonio on camels and all this stuff. Now, it is reported that during this, that the camel group suffered a great deal at the hands of the rebel soldiers, that they were just almost treated them like a game as far as they would beat the camels because they didn't like them. They had horses and that's what they wanted and all this. So they would beat the camels. They would shoot. They killed several of them just to kill them. They ate a few of them. I mean, they were just, they didn't care. To them, a camel was less than nothing at this point in time. So they had the herd that they had moved up into California, like I told you, that was north of Los Angeles near Fort Tejon and or Tejon. But there was 31 camels in it. So they transferred all that back in 1861. They transferred it to another part. And then there were more camels from that group, right, that had been transferred up there. So they'd kind of thinned it all out. So over the next 3 years, the camels there, they were well fed. They were still breeding. They were using them as a breeding program. They would be transferred to different posts. But the sad thing was, when they got to these posts, people really didn't know what to do, right? They were like, well, awesome, we got us a camel, but who the hell knows what to do with a camel? That's kind of what they were going through, because the original groups down in Texas, it takes months for them to get up here. Like, news don't, how you gonna, it says, don't provoke him, he'll spit on you. It says, run that buckle through that hole. You know what I mean? Like, how would you treat it? What's your SOP for taking care of camels? Can you imagine that with a damn telegraph? Like, you would have a pile of telegraph paper you couldn't jump a BMX bike over as a kid. So you can only imagine the trouble that they got into going through all this. So this goes back into, what are they going to do with them? So first they're like, mail delivery. We're going to use camels for mail delivery out in these rural areas because they can carry so much and they can go for so long. But they didn't do it because they thought that feeding and taking care of these animals, and of course they weren't using them. They couldn't find a use for them at this point now. It just became too much money. So at the time, this part, the Secretary of War, Mr. Edwin Stanton, said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put an order into effect. It's time to sell them. So Stanton wanted them sold off at a public auction. But what he didn't know was that there was a ton of performance tests given to these camels. And he was even quoted saying that, I cannot ascertain that these have ever been so employed as to be of any advantage to the military service. And I do not think that it will be practical to make them useful. The sad thing was, is there was tons of tests that had already taken place in Texas, had already taken place in Los Angeles, had been used in between all the tests. Everything that they had done with them was piles, but he never got the information. He didn't have the information in front of him when he ordered the auction and this basically disbursement of all of this camel camp, if you will. So on February 26th of 1964, February 26th, my father's birthday. I'm sorry, 1864. There were 37 camels, the ones from California, were sold off. All right. They sold each one of these camels off for $1,945. That was $52.56 per camel. Now, remind you, they paid $250 for them. There was 44 camels that were surviving that were from Camp Verde. And they actually, when the Civil War was over, they actually got them. So they got them back. And when they got them all back, it says on March 6th of 1866, 2 years later, they brought them up and sold them for even less. Out of those 44 camels, they only brought $1,364. They were $31 a camel. So for the cheap price, folks, of $31, you can't go out and eat dinner with your loved one for $31. You could own you a camel. Hell, you could own two. So all the sales were approved, the whole thing. And there was a fella named Montgomery Meigs. And Montgomery was the Army's quartermaster general involved in a lot of this camel stuff. He was, you know, helped with the logistics of it too. He had high hopes. His hopes were that civilians would get involved and figure out a very successful use for these camels. He said, I know there's something here we can use them for in this part of the United States. This is what we need. We don't have any other way. Like we said, you know, they're working on getting the railroad laid. They're doing all this stuff, but they were like, hey, you know, even though it's going in, everything's working, we could still use these animals, have some sort of value to us. There have to be. And he was extremely regretful and upset that this experiment had came to an end and that it was viewed as a failure in the eyes of the military men above him. He did not like that at all. He had become very close to some of the camels, you know, like you would get. You get involved in this. This is what you do. Now, for those asking, a lot of the camels ended up in circuses. They even had private ranches, bought them because they wanted to have them because it was like a sideshow thing. You know, a lot of miners and prospectors, because they were so cheap, pitched in and would buy one or two of them here or there and use them as pack animals. And like I said, it was, they would have strange pictures, you know, taken, like you get your pictures made with the camels and people would pay money to come see them that had never seen one. You have to imagine the curiosity that a camel would bring as much as the sideshow. Like P.T. Barnum probably had camels just because, right? I mean, you just imagine what this is. There's even the writing of a young boy that was 5 years old that lived in Fort Selden, New Mexico in 1885. And, the young boy's name was Douglas MacArthur, the general Douglas MacArthur. And he actually wrote that one day a curious and frightening animal with a blobbish head, long and curving neck, and shambling legs moseyed around the garrison. The animal was one of the old army camels. He actually saw one while he was in New Mexico as a child. Now, of course, you can only imagine. After a while, people, like we know that they've done in Florida, but they do it everywhere where they just let animals go. Eventually, that's what happened. And they let these camels go, which is what led to these camel sightings in Arizona of the Red Demon or the Red Ghost. And there's writings that said for years after this, all through the Southwest, people would catch glimpses of these sad, lonesome old camels all alone. There may be one or two, or there may just be one. Never finding a mate, never finding it, just alone out in the desert. Now, the last of these army camels, the original army camels, was named Topsy. And Topsy, it said, died in 1934 at Griffith Park in Los Angeles. Y'all ready for this, folks? At the age of 80. 80 years old. But there are accounts that came in after that of camel sightings that went on for several decades. Some believe even upwards of 20 years that some of the younger camels that were in the breeding program, like we're talking Topsy wasn't original. So some of the breeding program was gone on that these camels stayed in there. Now, they never officially, the U.S. Army never officially recognized the Army Camel Corps. It was simply a camel experiment. But it was viewed as what the Army called them as ships of the desert, is what the Army referred to them as. And so that's kind of where it ended. It had its flash in its pan. It fought for several years, a few decades, trying to make this thing happen. And it's one of those little pieces of military knowledge or of American history that not a lot of people think about, is we actually used camels. And for somehow my dumb butt ended up in some old camel museum without even knowing it was a thing and stumbled upon it. So I hope you enjoyed that long tale about desert camels and their tied to the U.S. military in the 1800s, because I had a good time discussing it. We'll take a quick break right quick and we'll jump back in and wrap this puppy up.
When was the last time you needed to go to the doctor, but you pushed it off? You made an excuse, right? Like, I'm too busy, or it'll heal on its own. That's a big one with me.
For real?
Or, I don't need any help, right? Or I don't even know which doctor to go to. I think we've all been there. Booking a doctor appointment can feel so daunting, but thanks to ZocDoc, there's no reason to delay. They make it so easy to find and book a doctor who's right for you. Sometimes searching for the right doctor can be very overwhelming, and it can be difficult because you got to find a doctor that accepts your particular insurance. You need a specialist that treats your symptoms, or you need that person to be within a certain number of miles from you. You may need a certain healthcare provider that doesn't have a 6-month waiting list, sometimes even longer. And you want a professional who will spend more than 5 minutes with you in the exam room. Well, ZocDoc makes it easy to fill in those blanks to help you find the right doctor for your specific needs.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors, choose the right one for your needs, and click to instantly book an appointment. Now, we're talking about in-network appointments with more than 100,000 healthcare providers across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, eye care to skin care, and much more. Now, you can filter those doctors or four doctors who take your insurance, who are located nearby, who are a good fit for any medical needs you may have, and who are highly rated by verified patients. You can also see their actual appointment openings. Choose a time that works for you and click to instantly book a visit. Plus, ZocDoc appointments happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking. And you can even score same-day appointments. Now, we use this. I tried it. It was fun. Uh-huh. Look, I looked for an eye doctor place. Boom. It was a good time. Wished I hadn't gone, but I did. It was one of those where now I've got horrible eyes. But we've used it. Y'all should give it a whirl. Look, so stop putting off all the doctor's appointments and just go to ZocDoc.com/expanded. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/expanded. Now, I know it's hard to understand sometimes with our Texas accents, so I'll lay it out here again for you. The ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/expanded. And there we have it.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Something fun. You know, like a camel?
No, I don't really care for them. They're right. Foul creatures.
They
right?
are foul creatures. I think they're awesome for one reason. They just eat cactus.
I heard.
And just
that,
eat it.
I heard that camels hold a grudge. Like if you do something wrong to them, like if you lay down at night.
Like they remember?
Yeah, they'll stomp your dome in, like kill you.
Oof.
That's what I've heard. I don't know. Because
hey,
listen, we have horses where we're at. We don't have
leave
camels.
Leave camels alone, man. Right?
Yeah.
Animals.
They spit on you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think it's because they're not native to here, so we have a different opinion? Like, maybe people in the Sahara Africa area, they don't like horses. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's the same thing. Look, a horse can do the exact same thing. You can find horses that will remember you. They don't like people. I think they're just the same. They're just a different built horse.
Yeah, but you don't see, like, cutting camels or... You know,
just because they can't do it doesn't mean they don't act the same. I mean, look at the size of like big. Thank goodness that Great Danes don't have the attitude of Chihuahuas.
That's true.
I mean, you have to look at that and be like, bro, those would be a problem.
That would be a problem.
I got something that's a problem for you. And I've thought about this before, but I didn't realize how long ago it was. Right. It hadn't crossed my mind until I read this whole article. And it was one of those deals that Lon got this again and fired it off. I appreciate this story because it's one of those, when I tell you, you've been to several of these cave systems, you've taken your family to see them and gone on vacation to see them. I'm sure this has crossed your mind. This took place in Mystic Caverns, Arkansas. Well, they're in Arkansas, folks. Get a load of this. It says, hello, and I want to thank you in advance for reading my story. In 1981, I was working for a contractor as a masonry apprentice after leaving trade school. That summer, we were working at Mystic Caverns in northern Arkansas. We were upgrading tour trails in the caves. On a Friday, it was getting close to quitting time, so myself and another guy had to go through the work area and just to make sure that all the tools were collected and that the safety barriers were in place. We weren't going to be working during the weekend, so the work area had to be tightened up before we left. The guy who was with me had to leave. I forgot why, so I was down there by myself for a while. I was almost finished loading up the cart when I heard the faint pounding sounds coming from deeper in the cavern. I thought that maybe one of the crew may still be in the cave, so I yelled out. The banging stopped and it was quiet. Then I started to hear slapping sounds for a few seconds, and it got quiet again. So I yelled out again. I didn't get a response, so I figured it was just cave critters or bats, and I started to make my way out. There was an area that I came upon where on the right of the railing, it just dropped off into a depression. There was some lighting, but difficult to see the bottom of the depression. And as I passed by, I heard some splashing sounds coming from that depression. I stopped and got a glimpse of something on two legs walking in the water below. Further away, there was a section of the cavern that opened up and it was well lit. As I watched, the splashing continued, and then I saw this thing moving out of the shadows and away from me. The only way I can describe it was something like walking on two legs with large frog feet. It stood about 5 foot tall and was dark grayish green. The head was large and rounded, though it never turned around, so I can't give much detail of the face. The body was thick in the chest, but narrow at the waist and hips. It bent at the knees when it stepped, and it had shiny skin resembling a frog. I didn't notice any hair. I didn't hear any vocals, just the splashing as it moved away from me. I'd estimate that it was 70 or so foot from me when I got a first good look at it. And I wasn't scared so much, just stunned. I grabbed the cart and quickly made my way towards the entrance. When we came back to work the next Monday, well, I didn't mention anything to anyone. I kept a sharp watch for anything out of the ordinary. The job lasted a few more weeks, and I didn't observe any other weird stuff. A few weeks after this, I found out that one of my girlfriend's cousins worked at the caverns. He replaced lighting and did other odds and ends, so he was in the cavern a lot. When I got the chance to meet him, I asked if he had ever seen something weird in the cave. He said that he hadn't seen anything out of the ordinary. I told him I was just wondering. I didn't want to alarm him with details of what I saw. I wasn't imagining this thing, and after all these years, I still get creeped out when I think of it. I've never heard or read of any other sightings in Mystic Caverns. What do y'all think this thing was? Thanks, Richard.
I think it was a bullywug.
It sounds like a bullywug.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I imagine a frog-like humanoid. It's a medium humanoid.
I love the idea of hearing the slapping sound because it makes me think of its feet, because I had seen the joke one time of, could you imagine if frogs could run?
Yeah.
You just hear the slaps of their feet as they take off running. Is this thing? But also, another thing that makes me wonder, not about the story at all, but it's crazy, is this. If there were something in there, it would be easy to find. I've never been to this cavern, but a lot of them would have to be careful where they came from, because there's so many trails where you don't get off trail that if something was disturbed, you could tell something had walked through, maybe the silt or whatever's in the bottom of these cavern pools or, you know, have disturbed it. But I'm sure there's areas of any of them, like Natural Bridge or Carlsbad or any of that. You know, there's spots that still you walk through. And if they were redoing the trails, they may have been in some stuff that was new or whatever it was to find out. But the reason I enjoy it so much is it does, for some reason, it doesn't surprise me to see something in a cave system.
Well, and we know that these cave and cavern systems, there are millions and millions of undiscovered areas that are deep down, you know, and some people theorize that the caves are connected all the way up the eastern coast, are all connected at some point.
It's so a type of hollow earth like that.
It makes you, it's something that makes you get creeped out about. Like, what could be in there? Maybe there are upright walking, 5 foot tall, 3 foot tall, frog like creatures in that cave system. At least I'd like to believe that there is, right?
I like to believe that there is. I've got one more here I want to leave with you, and I have done stories on this before. In the past, we've done segments on it. Kyle and I have brought this up, the Mapungari.
Uh-huh.
Now, you remember the Mapungari, folks? That is like a giant tree sloth. That's kind of what they believe this is, some giant sloth-looking. I wish they were still alive. I think it would be amazing to see the megafauna. I don't need anything crazy monsters, but like a big tree sloth or something, that might look pretty awesome. Well, there's a report of one, a possible one, in Ware County, Georgia. Let me hit you with this right here. It says, in autumn of 2017, I caught sight of a large animal moving through the cypress trees of a swampy area that borders one of the fields where I work. I live in Ware County, Georgia. I was working in the field at the time and noticed the movement. It was late afternoon and still light out. The animal was huge, hairy, and walked on all fours, but I did see it rear up once. It reminded me of a black bear, but much larger and lighter in color. And I was only about 200 yards away from it, and I could still have a good look at it. Now, I know for a fact this was not a bear. I've seen black bear in the Okefenokee, and this didn't look like one of those at all. I later saw a picture of an animal, a Mapungari, that is supposedly to be a legend, and I swear that that is what I saw. Have you ever heard of this animal? I haven't seen it since, but there have been a lot of cypress trees torn up lately, and I'm wondering if it has been the one causing it. Some people have said for many years that there's a swamp beast in Ware County, but I've never paid any mind to it until now. Hunter.
Wow. Yeah, Mapungari. They're just, the people claim that they're still around.
So there may be, maybe. Hey, look. Is it there? Probably not.
Yeah,
but if it's not, what was that?
Maybe it was the ghost of one.
What could you misidentify that is like, look, I've seen bear. It's big like a bear, but it's bigger. It's not built like that. Like, you can just tell it's different in its, the way it's made and in its gait. And then what could you mistake that for? What is in Georgia that you could be like, oh, I know that you may think I have a Mapungari, but I don't.
Right. Yeah.
This is actually what it is. What's out there?
I don't know, man. I don't know what people, I can't explain. What
the unexplainable.
Seeing, right? If you have any sightings of Mapungari or anything else you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Let's not forget about our sponsors. To help you kickstart a health plan that truly works, Prolon is offering Expanded Perspectives listeners 15% off site-wide, plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day nutritional program. Just visit prolonlife.com/expanded. That's prolonlife.com/expanded. And ZocDoc, right? Stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/expanded. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/expanded. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
The rest of my week, excuse me, let's see, I've got some projects that I need to wrap up the rest of this week. I got a few I need to start, a couple I need to button up, get all that ready. Got to get some stuff ready, like I told you, for us getting our gardens going, because Kyle and I are both going to have big gardens.
Yep.
Wait, it's going to be insane. We're going to have a lot of garden footage. You know what?
We're
going to have all kinds of salsa. We're going to have all kinds of, like,
pickles.
It's going to be
relish
popping.
Right, I can't wait.
So I got to get all that ready before, and then that's pretty much it. Nothing too crazy.
Good. Nothing too crazy.
No,
I don't have anything crazy going on either, folks. That's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time. Oh, wait, before we get out of here, if you want to help Expanded Perspectives out, you want more Expanded Perspectives, go to our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com.
We do ads for everybody but ourselves, because we're idiots.
I always forget to mention it. You can download the Patreon app. You can search Expanded Perspectives Lead on there. It's pretty easy to sign up for, and you'll be helping the show. You can also give it as a gift. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, David. What do you think the world needs more of?
Well, the world always needs more podcasts.
Didn't you used to have a podcast?
Not only did I used to have a podcast, Georgia. It's coming back. David Tennant Does a Podcast With. Season 3 is coming at ya.
Okay, and who are your guests?
Who are my guests? What about Russell T Davis? What about Jamila Jamil? What about Stanley the Tooch Tucci?
So it's really just you hanging out with your mates then?
Yeah.
Come, join me. David Tennant Does a Podcast With. Bye.